Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Last time that I checked, it was 5 chains on my neck. It was no smut on my rep. Last time that I checked, I was selling zones in the set. Make a quarter mil, no sweat. Last time that I checked, I'm the streets voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked, first you get the money, then respect, then the power and the hoes come next. Last time that I checked.
What up though? iHeart Miko Podcast, February 11th, 2018. That what you were just listening to is Nipsey Hussle. The song is called Last Time That I Checked, and it's on his album titled Victory Lap. Shout out to Nipsey, LA legend. Great music. Nipsey's still gangbanging, but he's still a real nigga, and that's why I fuck with him. I love that he speaks his mind about all issues. He don't care who has a problem with his opinion, and I feel like a lot of us need to be more like him. And yeah, so I fuck with Nipsey. I like that song. He's talking his shit, him and YG's. It's a really good song. But yeah, anyways, let me just start off by apologizing to my listeners for missing, for not posting the episode last week. For those of you that don't know, I have been trying my damnedest to start these podcasts for video and having them on YouTube and having a visual for them. There has been an extreme struggle with it, and I'm a little bit bothered, but what I've decided is, and I hope that you guys aren't mad, but I think I'm going to take a break from podcasting to focus on something that I really truly want to do, which is my own sports talk show. And in order to do that, I feel that I need to focus all of my energy on that. And podcasting is something that I truly, truly love. But my goal and my dreams have always been for me to have my own sports talk show. And I feel like right now I have the time and I have the energy to focus on that and try to make that a possibility. And I want to take a step back from podcasting. I'm not really sure how long it's going to be. I apologize if you don't want to wait. That's fine. But those of you that do, I would appreciate it. If you would wait for my return. Other than that, I mean, today's episode is still going to be fucking dope. As I told you guys before on social media, I have Cuffs the Legend joining me to see if he has that same energy he had before the Patriots lost the Super Bowl. I wanted to talk to him about, obviously, Super Bowl 52. we're also going to talk about the crazy, crazy, craziness of the NBA trade deadline, which is, you know, the Cavs kind of stole the show on that. But we'll talk about some other NBA stuff as well. And we're going to have a good show. But if you're looking for more Miko content, I was just on Out of Bounds last week. That is a show on Complex. If you go on YouTube, type in Complex's page and you will see a show called Out of Bounds hosted by Gilbert Arenas. I appeared on that show. And I also did another Vlad TV interview. You guys know how to reach Vlad. Just go to VladTV.com. Check out that episode as well. It's a newer one. And other than that, I will be all over the place, man. I'm trying to appear on a lot of other people's shows and podcasts and just get out there and do some more, you know, fun stuff with other people as I continue this journey to having my own sports talk show. And for those of you that support me and love me, I truly appreciate it. And for those that don't, hey, you know what? Life goes on, my nigga. Life will go on. And so, yeah, that's about it for right now. I'm going to get Cuffs on the line so we can get into all the shenanigans of the NBA and the NFL in the last 2 weeks. Cuffs.
What's up?
Welcome back.
You know I'm happy to be back. You know,
I had a lot of requests. And it wasn't all good. Everybody was like, "No, no, we need that same energy from him from last time when he was talking shit." So, of course, you know, I was like, "I know who you are. I already know you ain't no punk. Like, you gonna say what it is." But we gonna talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. But we're definitely getting the Super Bowl. We're gonna talk some basketball, and then I got some Ask Miko questions for you. But starting off, how you been?
Great. But, I mean, I'm doing real good.
Doing
I got no
good.
Complaints.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I wanted to have you on, obviously, because a lot has been going on with sports. Last week, I didn't put out a podcast. I had a lot of, as you saw earlier, I have a lot of equipment malfunctions and things going on. So I definitely needed this show to be cracking. So I had to have you on to talk about some of these things that took place in the last 2 weeks or so, I guess. So let's just start off with the Super Bowl, because that's the biggest event that just took place last week, Super Bowl 52. I had a party at my house. What did you do?
Yeah, I had a big Super Bowl party. I do it every year. You know, I'm a big Patriots fan, so we pretty much in the Super Bowl like every year.
Every year.
You know what I'm saying? So
it's pretty much y'all every party year. Every year.
Yeah, it's pretty much an annual thing in my house. And, you know, it's funny because when we have the Super Bowl party at my house, it's my dad, my sisters, my nieces, nephews, friends, everybody. And the funniest part about the Super Bowl party every time the Patriots are in the Super Bowl is everybody comes in droves just to root against my Patriots.
To your party.
So it's like, yeah, it's at my house,
that's
in my
sick.
Home.
Yo, that's savage.
Everybody is on the couch. And the funniest thing is some of my friends are actually watching the game. You know how people watch the game and they're trying to act like they don't have a dog in the fight and they're just watching the game.
Acting like they don't, yeah, but they really, really hating on your team.
Yeah, they say little things during the game where it's like, come on, man. I know y'all hate New England. I know you hate Tom Brady. I know you want to see a fool. That's fine. But, like, just be real about it. Don't try to hide it.
Don't front is basically what you're saying. Keep it real. You want us to lose. Say it to my face. Don't front. And then when the game over,
yeah,
then they start talking shit.
That's all I'm saying.
So what did you think from the beginning of the game, the very first drive when Foles drove down and scored that touchdown. I thought personally that was going to be a problem because I mean, this is me picking the Patriots to win the game. Obviously, they're a better team to me. They didn't win the game, but they have Tom Brady and Belichick, so they're a better team. They just got outplayed to me and a little bit outcoached. But that first drive made me think that Philly, they wasn't pussy. They was going to come out here and try to control the clock and force their offensive line to dominate the Patriots' defensive line. And they kind of set the tone early. What were you thinking early in the game? Were you thinking, like, this is a problem? Or were you like, it's early, I don't give a shit?
I am the most realistic Patriots fan, Tom Brady fan, there is. And a lot of times, like, people be wanting me to tweet all the time about my team and my favorite players. And I try to sit back and enjoy the experience, like the Super Bowl, you know, the Super Bowl week leading up to the game. So I kind of like get in my own little bubble, you know, going into the NBA Finals or the Super Bowl. I'm kind of like locked down. I want to enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I sit back and enjoy it. And I had this weird feeling in my stomach the whole 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl.
Why?
I can't explain it with words. I just, as a fan, I've seen Tom Brady in the Super Bowl 8 times. I've seen LeBron in the finals 8 times. And I always get this feeling where it's like, I separate the fandom. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I just be real realistic about the way I feel. And I didn't feel good about this, like I did even last year playing the Falcons. And I kind of kept it to myself because, of course, if you get on Twitter or social media and say, man, I don't really feel – you know how people be like, oh, you're not a real fan? It's like, no, I am a real fan.
You can be a real fan.
Point.
You can be honest.
And I wasn't really – I can't say the word enthusiastic, but I wasn't really pumped up for the game because I just had this feeling in my stomach like it's the Eagles' time. It just felt like everything just felt like it was just coming together for the Eagles at the right time, even though they had a backup quarterback, but I don't really consider him a prototypical backup. I think he's a legit starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I just didn't feel good, Miko. So even the morning of the game, the afternoon, all the festivities, the pregame stuff, I was like, man, I don't know about this. Then that first, when the kickoff came, and like you said, they went down, they was dinking and dunking, and they made a couple big plays. I'm like, this is exactly how I thought this shit was going to play out, man. Mm. And it's like, the game kind of played out like I thought it would. I felt like Brady was going to get the ball at the end, and it was going to be a close game. Mm-hmm. But I just had this feeling like, we won 5 Super Bowls. And I'm like, sometimes it's just in the universe for somebody else to win. You know what I'm saying?
Somebody said that to me on Instagram. They was like, I think this is Philly's year. Why don't you think that? I said, because I don't know that it's Philly's year. Like, people want me to say stuff I don't believe. I don't believe that. I would have believed that if Carson Wentz was playing, but I didn't believe in Nick Foles. Why would I?
I looked at it like I had a feeling the Eagles were going to win the Super Bowl this year, like leading up to the game. And then in the back of my mind, I'm still thinking like, he's the fucking Eagles we talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Eagles always going to
– they curse and they always choke.
They always going to lie in the big moment. I'm like, he's playing the Eagles, man. And then once I started watching that first quarter, I'm like, I'm going to tell you what had me nervous. It wasn't Tom Brady. I already knew that Tommy Boy was going to do his thing. I knew that. Mm-hmm. Like, I was 100% confident in Tom Brady and our offense. But right. That defense scared me all year long. And I was just so worried about us being able to get them off the field on third down. And that was the difference in the game. But it was like 10 for 15, I think, on third down.
Yeah. And then that big fourth and whatever that play was that they got. Yeah, that was like, huge.
And Doug Peterson, he just said, fuck it. You know what I'm saying? I'm playing the Patriots. I'm putting all my chips in the middle of the table. We're trying to win this motherfucker. So
yeah.
I respect him for playing with that mentality and having that mentality.
It was ballsy.
Not being conservative. He wasn't being conservative like John Fox and Ron Rivera, some of the other coaches. He was like, you know what? We're going to win this shit because we might not ever get back to this situation at this point. So, fuck, we're going for it.
I feel like one of the big reasons that they won was because a lot of teams that I've seen in the past, and not just playoffs, when you play against the Patriots and you get a lead, teams kind of like try that whole, let's run the clock down. Like the Eagles was like, no, we're going to score again. Like, we're going to keep scoring. Like, we're not going to play this game where it's like, we're going to play to win or play to lose. Like, we're going to play to lose. We're going to play to win the entire game. We're going to play our game, whatever that is. We're going to score points. And if we don't, then we don't. But we're going to play to score points is what it looked like. They never got passive. They never got, you know, they were never pussy, ever. All the play calling, all the shit that was happening, it was all like savage shit.
The only question I have is, how can we give up 41 points with arguably our best cornerback sitting on the bench the entire game?
Yo, you know what? I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, when it first came out that he wasn't playing and somebody was trying to say he had girls and weed, I would never have believed that. And to hear him say it's not true, what is your opinion now? What do you think? Do you think the Patriots sabotaged him on some contract shit, lied on him? Because they won't come out anymore and talk about it. But he has said that it's not true.
Man, I love the Patriots, but I say this a lot. I love the team because, for one, I'm a Tom Brady fan, so I rock with the team. But I am realistic. I am a realistic fan. And I tell them, these motherfuckers are shiesty.
Shiesty. Right? Yeah.
Like, the shit they did to Lawyer Malloy back in the day, the shit they did to, Thomas, the linebacker, they cut him. It's like they
the
done
D-lineman, that went to Houston. What was his name? Shit. They do a lot of shady shit to some of their star players.
Yeah, they do a lot of shady shit to their players. It's like a cut. I mean, I know sports is cutthroat in general in the pros, but these guys are like next level cutthroat.
Yeah.
And
elite level.
I know, after I saw some of the shit come out, I said, this feels like one of those, we trying to assassinate your character and have like
lower
a
your price.
Campaign. Yeah, and I was like, after seeing Butler's post on Instagram and really looking at what I was looking at in the media, I said, you know what? I really believe Malcolm Butler's side of the story 100%.
100%. I do too. Because it's easy to prove him wrong. The team can prove him wrong. They yeah. can say, this is what time we caught you, nigga. This is what you was doing. You was smoking weed with this bitch right here. Like, this is what you broke curfew. He said he had not break curfew at all. He didn't go to a concert. He didn't miss a meeting. He didn't miss a fucking thing. And if that were not true, the Patriots would come out and kill that whole thing if it was true.
But here's my perspective on it. Even, let's say,
he
even
did.
If he did
shits
any
and giggles.
Of those things.
You still got to play
if
him.
He did, yeah, if he did any of those things, like NFL players smoke weed
every day.
So, even if he did those things, we're trying to win our sixth Super Bowl. We don't give a rat's ass if you smoked a little weed or you stayed out past your curfew.
Right.
Like Allen Iverson, we talking about practice. We talking about curfew.
This would never happen in the NBA. You know this, right?
Yeah. It's
this would never happen. If a player was out with hoes, they don't give a damn.
The shit is deep. I know a lot. That's why a lot of players spoke up on the behalf of Malcolm Butler and Brandon Brown. We saw different guys that keep it real. Those guys always real. And that's kind of why they kind of blackballed from their situations. But it's like, you can't just fool everybody, Bill. And I respect Bill Belichick's legacy. And people were saying, well, Belichick has won 5 Super Bowls, so he gets the benefit of the doubt. And I'm like, that's exactly why. That's exactly why he should have, you know, he should look at this situation and say, I can't do a guy like this.
Right.
Like, I can't do a guy that's played 97, 98% of the snaps all year. Are we going to bench him?
And then y'all got cooked. In the secondary.
Yeah, the biggest game of everybody's career. And we out here getting destroyed on third down. Jeffrey, Aguilar, everybody. Like, my thing was, just talk X and O's, like, we can't have Patrick Chung and Eric Rowe guarding receivers in the slot. We can't do that.
Mm-mm. It's not going to work.
That's total mismatches. So I was watching that in the first quarter, and that's why I was like, I already feel kind of funny anyway. And this was before I even knew Malcolm Butler was bent. And once I saw that, oh, this guy really going to be stuck. He's really stubborn, and he's not going to put him in the game after he sees, you know, we cannot cover anybody. I'm like, we're going to lose, man.
Crazy,
like,
crazy
really
game. We're
going to lose the Super Bowl because of an old white man's stubborn pride. Like, we're going to lose the Super Bowl.
I really feel like he thought that he was
stubborn pride.
I feel like he thinks he's Bill, and I can overcome anything. I can coach. I don't need Butler, what do I need him for? I've been winning Super Bowls just fine.
Yeah,
I can get this done. I feel like that's what he was doing.
It's the arrogance of having the 5 Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. When you have the 5 Super Bowls, it's like I can be a little arrogant or I can make a questionable decision because I can rest on my laurels and people will say, well, even if he makes a mistake or he makes a bad call or puts the wrong guy in this position or he gets exposed in this situation, everybody can always say, well, he got 5 Super Bowls.
He can make that choice. But now you're making a choice for 53 other guys. You know, these other guys have worked this hard as well, and they've depended on Malcolm, and he's shown up. You know, he has been.
Tom Brady's pissed.
Yeah.
Tom Brady was pissed after the game. He had never said in the media because that's the Patriots way. But you saw how Tom Brady liked that Instagram post from Malcolm Butler, right?
Yeah.
You saw that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Can you imagine those conversations at home between Tom and Giselle? Like, this motherfucker, I can't believe. You know, that's my chance to get my 6th Super Bowl, and we out here getting. All I need to get, I said this when I watched the game. Tom Brady had the best Super Bowl performance of his career.
Yeah, and lost.
505 yards and 3 touchdowns. And all he needed was to get the ball with the lead. If he gets the ball with the lead, we're going to go up by 2 scores.
What is your opinion of people saying that Tom dropped that ball and that's why they didn't have a lead?
That's one play early in the game. I mean, he ain't no fucking wide receiver anyway. Like, I mean,
true.
He's the greatest athlete.
You see how bad it looked, athlete. Too? Like, he should have caught the ball, first of all. Ball hit his hands.
Yeah, he
should have caught the ball. But what do you?
He caught the damn ball, but my thing is, why the hell are we running that type of play anyway? We're getting a little too cute, man. we haven't done this shit all year long, And now we pulling out these Tecmo Bowl flea flickers in the Super Bowl. Like,
the Eagles did one too, but they scored on theirs.
Yeah, because their quarterback is a little more athletic than ours.
A little, my ass. Little my ass. Now, Tom Brady is a damn good quarterback, but athletic is low. Is extremely low.
Tom Brady is what we call, or what they call, he has sneaky athleticism.
Sneaky? Nigga, you can't sneak up on nobody with them big ass space boot cleats he be wearing. Why he wear offensive lineman cleats?
That's funny.
This nigga wearing offensive lineman cleats.
Yeah, Tom Brady, he does. I always thought that too. I said, man, he got those big bulky cleats with the tape wrap. He's like an offensive lineman in the '80s, man. Like, yes. Funny.
I was like, it's no way Tom catching this ball. It's no fucking way he catching this ball, and he didn't. I was like, man, this is a loss.
But let me just say this to all the listeners out there listening to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not get it misconstrued and just start talking, you know, get caught up in the moment and all these prisoners of the moment saying, well, Tom Brady is still the greatest quarterback of all time.
I wanted to ask you about that. Because, you know, what some people are saying now, that basically just, that loss put Joe Montana back in GOAT status.
Nah,
what is your opinion of that?
That's why I hate social media. That's the gift and the curse of social media, because we live in a society now where everything literally changes from not just day to day, but it's like from game to game,
hour to
season
hour,
to season. Like, you can be, okay, like, you got to go back. That's why I like to save certain stuff or screenshot certain stuff media people say, because they'll say, Tom Brady has, he's solidified his legacy. He's like, this is last year after they beat the Falcons. Like, you go back and pull up any of these articles on Bleacher Report or any of these main websites, he's the greatest. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt he's the greatest. Move over with Joe Montana, all the cliches in the world, all the hyperbole. Now, he loses the Super Bowl the next year, and it's like, well, you know, no, man.
I don't think anybody's shitting on him saying that he's not great as hell. I think that what people are trying to say is that Joe Montana, you know, 4-0 in the Super Bowls. He got 11 touchdowns, no turnovers. You know, he statistically and as far as rings are concerned, he has done some things that where people can argue he's the greatest. What is your opinion?
This sounds funny. Look, this sounds funny. And sometimes I think fans don't just step back and just think sometimes, like, who made that the criteria to say any individual athlete is the greatest at their sport individually or their position of all time? We're talking about position. We're not talking like team sports. Like, he plays a team sport, but he's an individual player. He's a mm-hmm. quarterback. So we're talking about his individual position. And it's like, it's always, 1 minute is an individual we're talking about, and then when people get on the wrong side of the argument, it's like, oh, it's a team game. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a defense. You know how they mm-hmm. pick and choose when they want to have excuses for their favorite player. It all comes down to who's your favorite player and who you're biased to, right?
Right.
That's pretty much how it works. Any barbershop in America, any water cooler argument about who the greatest of all time. I just feel like people lose sight of greatness because we always feel like the criteria to be the greatest is you have zero loss in the championship. And I always thought that was kind of stupid because let's look at Muhammad Ali, right? People say Muhammad Ali is the greatest. Like, everybody will say, when you say the greatest boxer of all time, they even call him the greatest. You know what I'm saying? He's called the greatest. Like, I can't remember his record. I think he lost 3 or 4 fights in his career, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not an undefeated fighter, but if you mention the greatest of all time, his name is 1 or 2.
But you can't compare boxing, though, because that's different. In boxing, you can legit be better than your opponent. If they catch you with one punch, you can go to sleep, flat out, and that's a loss. So I just feel like with boxing, it's a different kind of sport. There's no one punch that can get you an L in a Super Bowl game. You see what I mean?
But what I'm really trying to specify is just like Bill Russell. Like, he has 11 championships. And you got guys like Magic Johnson who went to the finals, I think, 9 times, and he lost like 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we pick and choose. We love that. We love that. Oh, he's 6-0. Or Montana's. Like, I don't necessarily think you're better because you went there and you didn't lose. Like, that's cool. It's great achievement that you didn't lose. But if you play 20 seasons like Michael Jordan did, I think he played 20 seasons, and you only go to the championship six times, okay, there's a lot of variables in there. You play some scrub teams in the championship, too. We don't want to talk about that. But it's like you 6-0, but you lost 14 other years. You didn't even get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got a guy like Brady. He's been to 8 Super Bowls. That's double the amount of Super Bowls that Joe Montana even went through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, come on, that guy, I don't really see him as being a better quarterback. And he had the greatest offensive mind, arguably, to ever coach football in Bill Walsh.
People say that he's got the greatest coach, that Tom got the greatest coach ever.
Tom does have the greatest football coach, but people still lose sight of the fact
defensive
that Bill
coach.
Belichick is a defensive guru.
Right.
He is not some offensive genius like Bill Walsh was.
But see, in my opinion,
Tom Brady.
Go ahead.
I said Tom Brady has never had Jerry Rice, John Taylor on the other side, great tight ends, Roger Craig. Like, he had a great offensive line, the 49ers defense, great Charles Haley, all these guys. Like, it's a different era of football. But, I mean, it's kind of like the thing where I say, I think I said it on the last podcast with you, what else does Tom Brady have to do to prove he's the greatest? Like, he's bounced back from every Super Bowl loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's not great.
I think like, that this loss, this is my opinion. I've always been a huge Joe Montana fan my whole life. And the only person that I would entertain, there's two people that I'll entertain as the greatest. And the only reason I even allow people to entertain me with Aaron Rodgers is because I think he's fucking incredible, flat out. I think he's an incredible football player. Does he win? No, doesn't win. Doesn't always mean you're not the greatest or that you're great. I think my husband's the dopest corner ever play. He ain't never even touched, sniffed nowhere near the Super Bowl. But it's all about individual play. You can break all that down, or you can go on the whole team thing. And I just feel like it's a good discussion. Do you think that it's disrespectful to have Joe Montana in a debate with Tom Brady as the GOAT?
No, it's not disrespectful at all, because Joe was great. But I just feel like if you really break their careers down, and you can go online and look at every roster they played with when they went to the Super Bowl. Like, Joe Montana went to the Super Bowl 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady has went to the Super Bowl 8 times. And every time Tom Brady has been to the Super Bowl, if you look at those rosters, there have been flaws or major injuries on either the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball. Like, last year, he won the Super Bowl without Gronk. This year, the reason why I didn't feel as confident as last year is because our defense was fucking atrocious, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're missing Julian Edelman, who was arguably one of the best clutch receivers in the league. So it was just you and Gronk, pretty much. Brandon Cooks gets hurt early in the game, which changed the whole
second half
of that game.
Yeah.
So people don't never go back, and when we revisit history, those things can always get left out of the water cooler debate or the message board debates when guys say, "Oh, this guy's the greatest." They don't want to like include those little variables that go along with the journey to get to the Super Bowl. And like I said, after the Super Bowl, he's been to 8 of them. Some guys are lucky to even get to one Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They're lucky, because you got to look at the war of attrition, the injuries. Like, you have to actually be lucky for your team to make the Super Bowl, honestly.
Yes, you do. A lot of things have to go your way.
Like,
a lot of things have to go your way.
Everything has to go your way. All the stars have their line. Like, the Eagles, they really got lucky this year. They lost Jason Peters. They lost Sproles. They lost, who's the guy? Is it Howard? On the other guy, is it Jordan Howard? I forgot his name. They lost, like, 2 or 3 key starters, and they still made it. And Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
And they still made it. Like,
yeah.
We don't really see that happen often.
It was they were just rolling at the right time. Things were going right. And when Nick Foles came in, he did exactly what he needed to do. That's what happened.
They played our sorry. they went up against the perfect defense for Nick Foles to go up against. You see what I'm saying? He faced the perfect defense to make him look like a player. I mean, I think he's a good player, but our defense is so terrible. They made Nick Foles look like Tom Brady.
So what do you think? So what do you think of Nick Foles' future now? Do you think that he remains a backup here? Do you think that he leaves? And do you think they should trade and get something for him since he's worth something? You can't have both of them on your roster. It makes no sense at this point.
I think they're going to keep him. They're going to keep him because they're waiting to see how Wentz comes back from his come back from his injury. And I think that's going to take a little time. So you don't want to be without a quarterback to back him up. So they're going to bring him back. And I think he's a good guy. He got a great story because he almost quit football a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he did quit and came back.
He got a great story. So it's like I feel like they're going to bring him back. But I think what's going to happen, and not wishing bad on the guy, but I think one of these other teams, whether it be the Cleveland Browns or one of these other franchises, they're going to drink the Kool-Aid. They're going to be a hype beast and get caught up in the hype and get caught up in the moment. A lot of people have done this in other sports as well and the NFL where – a guy comes off a championship run, whether he's a quarterback, running back, receiver, defensive back, and they're going to throw him that bag, and then everybody's going to be sitting back like, damn, the Cleveland Browns, like, you don't really look the same, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Because
like,
all that other things matter. Other players, the coaches, the scheme, like the defense, everything matters. It all matters in the NFL, you know?
Yeah, the NFL is the ultimate puzzle. Like, it's the ultimate puzzle, and – sometimes those pieces fit, and if you – I feel like the Eagles had the perfect puzzle this year.
Yeah.
Like, it just worked out. They lost their starting quarterback, and everybody kind of wrote them off. Practically everybody in the media said, nah, we can't go with the Eagles. We don't go – even though they're number one seed, nah, we're going with the Vikings or the Panthers or the Saints. And it's like, damn, they've got – I mean, I'll give them guys credit. They was motivated.
They had three games in a row. Nick Foles and that team had three games in a row where they balled the fuck out.
Yeah, it was their time, man. That's why I said, man, I hate using the cliches, but I was like, I just had to tip my hat to them because I'm like, man, it's their time. This was like the perfect snowball effect, and it's like an avalanche, man. And it's like once they got that momentum, I was like, shit, we done, man. Like, Tommy did everything he could, man. 500 yards in the Super Bowl. It's like, come on, what else can my guy do out here, man?
So let me ask you this. There's some rumors that the Patriots are potentially going to draft a quarterback. Do you think Tom Brady's staying? Do you think he's upset at Belichick? First of all, they had the issues before. Then Belichick was upset about them getting rid of Garoppolo. Now Tom seems a little salty that Malcolm Butler didn't play. Do you think this is just a temporary thing where they might be mad at each other, but come July, all is fine and we back to football? Or do you think that we're going to see some changes?
No, I think we're going to come back even more motivated because we lost the Super Bowl, and that stings. And we all know Tom Brady is one of those guys. He's already looking for motivation even after he wins the Super Bowl. He comes back hungry. So that bad taste in his mouth, he's going to come back hungry. He's going to be eating his avocado ice cream. He's going to be doing the yoga. You know, he's going to be doing all the shit at the house, getting the sweetest massages. He's going to come back ready. Josh McDaniels. You know, he's coming back. I thought Josh is out of here. Yeah, I did too. I
said, what happened?
He told the coach, hey, enjoy the project, man. I you know, I'm going to stay over here with the winners. You know, I'm going to stay over here. It's kind of like he had a change of heart at the altar, man. He got to the altar, got there, like, damn, man, I don't really want to marry this chick. And he's like, I'm coming back.
You're disgusting.
I'm coming back home, man. Like,
you're disgusting. I want to be a hoe. I want to be out in these streets.
Yeah,
I don't want to be tied down.
I still got a few more years left in the tank to sow my oats, so I'm going back over here where I was at. So I'm happy to see McDaniels come back because I think that would have been a major loss for our offense and just the way we do things. So I'm happy with McDaniels coming back. And the fact that I think Belichick is really grooming him to take over the head coaching job in like a year or two, I think that's the direction we're going in. I think McDaniels is going to be our coach because him and Tom have a great relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be – I think this really could be – this could possibly be Belichick's last year right here if we win or lose.
I was thinking it's either going to be Tom or Belichick. One of those two are going to go after this year.
I think Belichick with his personality and his stubbornness, I think he's going to be the one to say, you know what, I'm out of here. But I think he's going to dip first, and it's going to be McDaniels and Tom Brady. We all know Brady was born in that manger, man. So he's going to be able to play as long as he wants to. He's like 45, 50 years old, man.
Okay. It just depends on if they want to pay him, because I heard a rumor that he got a little salty when he heard about Garoppolo's contract. Do you think Tom is done taking pay cuts for the Patriots? Do you think he's like, nah, bro, I need this bag now?
That's a lot of bread, man, for somebody.
Somebody ain't showed you shit. For real.
I really believe in the kid, and I was really upset when we traded him, because I was like, damn, he has showed a lot of promise in the few games he did start for New England that year. But for him to get that type of chicken, like, with that small sample size that we've seen, I'm like, damn. I know guys around the league think to themselves, what else we got to do, man?
Like, I've been doing all this shit, but I think that's how the league is, though. It's designed to give the quarterback all the money. So, and the quarterback is usually the white guy. So that's how this league is. That's how it is. Yeah, they would rather pay the quarterback.
Brady got to feel the type of way.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably feels the type of way. Like, I've been taking pay cuts for you motherfuckers for years to build a Super Bowl contender every year and restructuring my deal. And then this guy gets traded away. And he get like $135 million.
Yeah. I think it was 135. I could be wrong, but I think it was 135.
Hey, but like I tell people all the time, the American dream is to be overpaid.
Yeah, definitely. It's overpaid and underworked.
Yeah.
Overpaid and underworked. Hall of Fame. Let's segue out of this Super Bowl thing. I'm over it. The Patriots are already predicted to win 2019 Super Bowl, like, right after the loss. It's like, okay, we know they're going to be back. We get it. So let's move on. Hall of Fame happened. Of course, Ray Lewis got in. He's a coon for the league. Of course, he was going to get in. Brian Dawkins. You know, people's like, oh, bro, you know, I'm like, of course he get in. He's a fucking coon boy. Brian Dawkins got in, Urlacher. T.O. finally got in. And I think T.O. got in because Randy Moss got in. What's your opinion of that?
I was very skeptical. Like, I was like, man, they're going to jerk one of the boys. I was like, I had a feeling that one of them was going to get in, but I couldn't really decide which one it was going to be, but I just had a feeling one of them was going to get jerked. And when I saw it come across the timeline, I was like, oh, my God, he finally got it right. Like, they let both of the real niggas in.
But I feel like they had to, because, you know, they tried to sabotage T.O. because of his antics and his celebration stuff. But he never took a play off. He never took a day off. He never did any of that. And we all know Randy Moss took days off. We all know he took time off. Like, he said it himself. So I felt like if they were going to let Moss in after he already said he took days off and T.O. just was an antic celebrator, they called him a locker room cancer, whatever. I feel like if they would have let Moss in and still jerked him off, that would have looked really bad. Like, really bad. And I think they were just like, you know what? Let's just let him in. Fuck it.
Yeah, I'm glad to see Randy Cook get in, because that's my favorite wide receiver ever since I've been watching football. That's my favorite, even over Jerry Rice.
I'm team. People always ask me Jerry Rice or Randy Moss. I don't even think it's a question. And it's no shade to Jerry Rice. It's quite simply, you don't even have a name. Nobody named nothing after you. And to me, it's stats can be one thing, but watching the game, it's clear which one of them is the better player. It's clear which one you want on your team.
Yeah. So, like, my thing as a child, I was probably 17, 18 when Moss was at Marshall. So I remember him when I first saw the guy when he caught the ball. He had the pinstripe socks on. He heard the guy. I'm like, who is this guy? He's like 6'4", 6'5", running like this. And me and my best friend, we was trying to find the Marshall games on all the ESPN channels. Like, yo, who's this Randy Moss guy? So he ended up being not only one of my favorite wide receivers and football players. I have him top five in my all-time athletes, because it's just one of those guys. Like, I kind of compare him to Allen Iverson.
Because he's in my top five.
He's one of, like, the real ones. Mm-hmm. And the media, we always know how the media treated those guys during their careers, and they always just try their best to knock those guys off the pedestal they was on. And they tried their best just to always take shots at these guys. And I always compared those two guys as far as, like, their image. And they was brash, and they knew they were great. And it's like, we don't give a fuck what you think about us. We ball. You know what I'm saying? And it's they just real. Like I said, I feel like the real niggas won when Randy Moss got in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Like, it was just a win for all the real niggas across the whole world. Like, Randy Moss is in? Like, yeah. That's a major win. Regardless of, that's one of my biggest regrets as a sports fan. When they lost the Super Bowl that year with him and Brady,
I'm sick.
I was like, God, the real, I just knew that was the time where, like, Allen Iverson lost the NBA Finals, and that broke my heart. So I'm like, if Randy Moss, this is our opportunity. Like, if Randy Moss wins the Super Bowl, it's like a certain type of athlete has never really got to the bounce top. You feel me?
Yeah.
So I'm like, Randy Moss is like, he's the total opposite of everything they want a black athlete to be, as far as they don't want you to speak your mind. They don't want you to keep it real. They don't want you to do any of those things. You a thug. You a hoodlum.
And they don't want you to be honest either.
Yeah, they don't want you to speak the truth. They don't want you to be honest. They want to, like, keep you in that little bubble. And I'm like, if Randy Moss wins the Super Bowl, I just knew they were going to win it that year. That's one of my biggest regrets ever. It's like, damn, man, we 18-0, and we fucking lost to the damn Giants, man.
Yeah, Dolphins fans were so happy. They didn't want nobody to go undefeated and do nothing great.
Yeah, but Moss, that dude, man, I'm happy for him. Like, I seen the video of him crying and stuff, like, that shit gave me goosebumps. I was like, my eyes started watering. I'm like, man, that's so real. Like,
somebody had cut an onion around you.
Yeah, yeah. My ceiling started leaking. I was like, damn, shit leaking from the ceiling in my crib. Man, what's going on here, man? I was like, what's dust on the ceiling fan or something? What's going on?
Oh, my God. So now the Super Bowl's over, the Hall of Fame's over, now we can focus on some basketball, which is the greatest sport, in my opinion. I like basketball more than football. Give me a timeout real quick, Cuffs, because we're going to switch the battery. That's a good segue. Hold on 1 second. So a lot of trades took place. It was a big week, and we can go quickly over everybody else. Blake Griffin found out he was traded to the Pistons on Twitter. What does that mean? What does that mean when you're the face of your franchise and you find out that you got traded on social media?
It gives you a good idea of how they feel about it. Like, it's the Clippers. We're talking about the Clippers. Like, we're talking about the L.A. Clippers of all franchises. Like, they've never been shit, and they never will be shit. And a lot of guys feel that way. They used to play for the Clippers. So it just shows you the time we live in, where they can't even give you a courtesy phone call. They look, man, Blake, you know, we decided to trade you.
And the sickest part is, damn, a phone call. Like, when you start entertaining trades, you should let a nigga know. Like, when you have decided, you know what, I'm going to put you out there, because it's not public knowledge. But when you start contacting teams, I feel like you should let the player know, hey, this is what we're doing. But I feel like they don't do that in case the trade doesn't go through, and then the player feels like away. Like, damn.
Like DeAndre? You saw this clip from DeAndre today?
No, what did he say?
I saw the clip today, but I think it was from yesterday. The reporter asked him, does he feel wanted? I think something to the extent of, do you feel wanted? And he was like, what you think? And the reporter was like, he was like, yeah, me neither. He was like, DeAndre has seen him the last month or two, and then down to the trade deadline at 3:00 Thursday, he didn't get traded. So now he's back in there. It's like your girlfriend. You find out your girlfriend's trying to get rid of you or dump you, and then you hear about it from some other people, and then you got to come back home, and she like, nah, we good. But like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's crazy.
I was just playing.
Kidding. Yeah, you can stay around.
You know what? I ain't really like the mother offers. The mother niggas was hollering at me in my DMs. I went and linked up with some of them.
Like,
fucked on a couple of them, and it just didn't work out. I'm going to just stay with you.
But I think Blake Griffin gonna do some good things in Detroit. Even I don't really see them as a contender, because the game is more small ball oriented now, and a lot of teams is all about spacing the floor and shooting that 3-point shot. So him and Drummond kind of clog up the paint a little bit, because Drummond can't really stretch it out and shoot.
Right.
I didn't think it was
a great trade. I didn't think it was like anything that made them a contender or put them in a different position.
It just
seemed like the Clippers were just dumping people. Like, they just dumped him.
Yeah, they were just dumping. They wanted to get some younger guys. Like these teams always say, we're trying to rebuild. Rebuild for what?
Right.
You're not a contender. What you rebuilding for?
Speaking of younger guys, Lou Will, they kept Lou Will. I feel like Lou Will's the face of the Clippers now. And I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, he had his little threesome, his two girlfriends that were cool with it and everything. And then I think that on social media, this guy, I don't remember exactly who it was, But it might have been something with Shannon Sharp, too. They were talking about how his antics or his situationships with his girls was making guys look bad, or having their women question them on whether they have another woman and all this stuff. And then I saw some players talking shit to him, saying, you're a bench player, you're a backup player. Like, I don't understand how anybody can call Lou Will a backup player, a bench player. Like I get it. He's a sixth man, but that's for a reason. He could, like, that's a reason. And I feel like the sixth man is low-key like a starter on your team. Like, especially if he is your sixth man, he's like a starter. And why do you think people were disrespecting him or feeling away, and he had to respond and talk some shit back? It was just kind of stupid to me. Like, I just feel like people just really wanted to just pick on him or talk some shit to him.
Well, I said it when he got his new contract a couple days ago. Like, he's actually one of the most underpaid guys in the league.
Exactly.
For what he does.
Yeah. He's a fire starter.
You got guys like Allen Crabb get like $75 million contract, and Lou Will get like $24 million for 3 years.
Crazy.
Like, $8 million a year is great. If you're looking at, okay, you play basketball, you know how people always try to break it down. Oh, they're playing basketball. That's cool, right? Living. That's cool. But this guy's market value should be at least at the $10 to $12 million a year rate.
Right.
I've always thought that.
And I feel like that's why people disrespect him, because of his contract. They try to throw shade. But when you step out on that court, though.
Yeah, because he should have been. He had a great argument to be an all-star this year. It's mm-hmm. like one of his best seasons. I think this is the best season. I was hoping he went to Cleveland.
I was too. I was hoping him, and I wanted the point guard from Carolina. What's his name? Kemba? Not Kemba. What's the point guard's name for
Charlotte? Kemba Walker. Yeah.
Walker. Yeah, that's who I wanted. I think he.
Yeah, that's who. That was my number one. That was number one on my wish list.
Kemba, huh? That was. Hello.
Yeah. I wanted Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that would have been a great pickup. But, I mean, it didn't happen. What do you think about the trades that the Cavs made? I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy, but I thought it was dope. I thought they got younger, and I feel like they built for the future.
That's why when you hit me up and you was like, yo, we got this podcast trade. I was like, I was so hyped, because all I can say is, it's information that I knew, like, mm-hmm. the trade deadline was Thursday at 3. It was information and people I was talking to, like, on the team. I can't say but so much, but I was talking to players, mm-hmm. and I knew some crazy shit was about to go down. And it's funny now, like, you know, Minnesota and Cleveland played, Wednesday night, right?
Right.
That's when LeBron hit the game winner on Jimmy Butler. So if you go back and watch that game, like rewatching that game and seeing the footage, like even if when LeBron made the shot and you see how Isaiah tried to jump in and celebrate,
and he ignored him, like he totally like wouldn't give him a chest bump, like he wouldn't like, chest bump everybody else, and I was like, why are they doing that to IT?
Like, I'm telling you, with the stuff I heard before the trade. And then watching that game transpire, and then watching the trade deadline, the trade the next day, all the trades that went down, like, it is absolutely hilarious how stuff plays out when you hear about it beforehand.
Why do you think LeBron ignored him like that, though?
Like I say, I don't want to be at liberty. I'm not at liberty to say certain things.
Okay.
But it's like, to put it in a nutshell, it's like, people knew, man. Like, people.
Do you
knew,
think that had a part to why he seemed angry? He seemed salty, unhappy.
Yes.
At first, I thought it was just because Boston traded him and he felt away. But then I started to think that maybe it was the fact that he knew he didn't fit with the Cavs. He knew that they were like, you know what, this piece ain't right. He's not 100%. He can't play D. He was a weakness on defense for us, which was terrible because we played shitty ass defense. So you need your point guard to be able to guard somebody.
What happened with IT, and this is me talking, what happened with IT, because I heard a lot of things too, but what happened with Isaiah Thomas' heart was still in Boston. His heart and mm-hmm. his mind and his soul was still in Boston. And let me explain why. Before Isaiah Thomas came to the Celtics the last two seasons, he was the perennial sixth man in Sacramento and in Phoenix. He went to Boston that first year. They was on a rebuilding, like they had a rebuild. You know, they tore up the whole team. They was in rebuilding mode. And he came in, and surprisingly, they had a good year. Then the following year, he really stepped his game up. He had a high usage rate. That's what people missing in the whole conversation. When you're the only guy that's pretty much chucking up shots, and you got the fluorescent green light every night, and you're playing in Brad Stevens' system, you're going to put up some crazy
video game numbers.
And you're going to pad your stats. So the whole league is on notice, like, yo, Isaiah Thomas is like, this is like, he's an all-star now. He's an MVP candidate now. And he got hurt, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, he went to Cleveland, and everybody in the organization said the right things in the press conferences.
Like they always do.
Training camp, like they always do. The politically correct shit, all the, you know, they said the right things in the media because they don't want fans to panic because that affects ticket sales. That affects season ticket sales. They don't want their fans to say, oh, God, I can't believe he traded Kyrie. Because a lot of people were saying that. Mm-hmm. And he went there, and to keep it real with you, what happened was, number one, he wasn't the same Isaiah Thomas health-wise. He was he was nowhere near 100%. And he came back, and what really did Isaiah in is IT was talking too much shit.
Yeah.
And you can't come into, I try to compare it to people, like, you can't go to a job site or be in the workplace in corporate America and come into a job where these guys have had great success already before you got to this job. And it's like walking in the break room or walking in the conference room and say, we need to do it this way, or we need to do this that way, or I'm going to call you out because I don't like how you do this. And guys can look at you like, hey, you just got here, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who the fuck are you? You know, you can't check Kevin Love in the team meeting in front of everybody and everybody looking at you like, huh? Like,
right.
And then you can't be saying remarks after the game about, you know, in Boston, I feel like we played a lot better defensively. Like, you're the worst defender on our team.
There
what
are you
talking about? So it's like he put his foot in his mouth so many different times in the last couple weeks.
Right.
And it was like it became.
It seemed like he was unhappy and bitter and angry. And then he did, when that interview, when he was talking about how they dumped him, it just seemed like his wife left him or something.
Yeah, it's deep. Like, all the conversations I had with guys, it's so many layers to this Isaiah Thomas shit. And there was a lot of pressure on him because fans, you got to think how fans think. Like, if you trade a superstar like Kyrie Irving, fans expect a superstar in return.
Yeah.
So fans thought I knew we didn't get the same Isaiah Thomas, but I know a lot of other Cavs fans, LeBron fans, people that delusional. And I'm like, bruh.
No, I saw the first game, the very first game he played. I said, oh, this is great. He can still shoot the ball, but it's not right. He couldn't get off the ground. Yeah,
those first two games was fool's gold, and even he said it after the first two games. So I sat back, I watched a couple games, and I heard the announcers and the analysts and even the media guys saying, if you go back and read some of the stuff they were saying, like, he got to get his legs back, or he got to get his, you know, basketball legs back. And I played basketball, you played basketball, and I'm sitting here like, it's not that, bro.
Yeah.
I text a couple of my friends like, you know what, bro? He ain't the same, bro. He don't have the same explosiveness.
The explosion is what I said. And I was like, this is what I thought. This is what I was talking to Brent about. I said, maybe he's pacing himself. Maybe he don't want to come out here batshit balls to the wall. You know, he want to slowly roll in. And then as the game was going, I was like, nah, you would have been to the wall by now. If you was a real nigga,
he's like,
you'd have been hitting the gas.
He's 70%. Right now, he's probably 70% of his former self.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened with the franchise, they understand we can still compete for this championship this year if we go all in. But if we keep what we have right now with this Isaiah Thomas situation and a couple of these other guys, we probably can get out of the East because LeBron is that great. But if we play Golden State or Houston or even OKC in the championship, we're not going to beat those teams because Isaiah Thomas is that much of a liability defensively.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to make this move. And I really give them credit, and this is why I say I give Kobe Altman and the Cavs front office credit, because a lot of times in sport, when a front office makes mistakes, they hate to admit that because
and they live with the mistake instead of fixing it.
Yeah, they'll ride their fucking mistake. But like Blake Bortles, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, they rode that shit for 3 or 4 years. I mean, longer than that. How long Blake Bortles been in the league? 5, 6 years?
Yeah, longer than that.
Like,
yeah.
They rode that whole mistake like for a long time, and just now this year, they had a decent year. They got to the AFC Championship.
And but now they can ride it even longer because of that.
They can ride it even longer. So the point I'm making is, I give them credit because they sat back and they observed this shit. And they said, you know what, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, those guys are not what we thought they were. For whatever reason, I know Jay Crowder had his situation where his mom passed and he might not be emotionally there or mentally there this year. Okay, we understand that. But they had to make a move right now because mm-hmm. they got LeBron James and they got an opportunity to resign LeBron James and make a great impression that we're trying to win it all. So it's like, you know what? We got to make this move and pull this trigger. And when I saw them make those three trades, I was so happy because I'm like, this is unprecedented for managers to say, we fucked up. Mm-hmm. Like, we made a fucked up trade with Kyrie, and we got some terrible pieces back that we didn't really, we thought they were going to be this and that, but it pan out. And we gave them. Like, you don't see this happen.
Right. So what they did three different team trades. They got rid of IT and Crowder. They went to the Lakers when they picked up Nance and Clarkson, right?
Yeah, Crowder and Derrick Rose went to Utah.
Oh, to Utah.
IT and Channing Frye went to LA.
D-Wade.
Shumpert went to Sacramento. D-Wade went to Miami.
Back home. And I was happy for him. Yeah. So and then we picked up Hood, who I think is fucking, that is incredible.
That's the piece that I'm most excited about.
Yes, me too. Nance Jr., who I love, and I love that he tweeted it was an upgrade. Like, I fucks with that. You got to come in talking shit. And we just got some more other pieces. Do you think that this puts the Cavs back in control of the East?
Yeah, they definitely are the top dog in the East once again. I feel like they're the clear-cut favorite in the East. And it's going to be very interesting to see how these parts mesh. And I was talking to a close friend last night, and I kind of compared it to that very first year LeBron came back when they made the Shumpert, J.R. Smith, and Miles Dow trade.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember at that time, everybody was like, man, J.R. Smith is trash, and Shumpert is trash. And they was like, you know, it's the middle of the season. There's no way they're going to be able to put it together. And LeBron put that team together. They got all the parts. You know, they integrated everybody together. They got acclimated. And they went on and went to the finals. And if Kyrie and Kevin Love don't get hurt, they beat Golden State, right?
I agree.
So I feel like the only thing they're up against right now is simply building that chemistry, which I am 100% confident that LeBron James is going to do. I spoke to him like 2 days ago. Like, yeah, like, I just told him flat out, turn the fuck up on these people, bro. Like, turn the fuck up. Like, have fun again. And mm-hmm. you saw last night against the Hawks. And you saw the other night against Minnesota. We about to see a new LeBron James this second part of the season.
I hope his smile comes back. Doesn't seem like he's been having fun
night.
At all.
I saw it last night. I don't know if you saw the game last night against the Hawks. I know the Hawks ain't shit.
No, I was actually at a game. I didn't get to watch it.
It's deeper than just the opponent. Like, LeBron was out there bouncing around. He was the ball. You know, he had 19 assists, a career high in assists last night. And I saw that game and I took away. I said, you know what, bro? Like, he is simply having fun again. And when LeBron is having fun again, he got a bunch of shooters around him. And he can drive and break down the defense and he can score. He can kick it out to guys. That's when LeBron is at his best, when he can do both. And mm-hmm. I felt like with the guys he had, like, they don't have that same energy that LeBron has. So I told people straight up, I said, the last couple weeks, LeBron been killing, bro. Like, yeah. LeBron been coasting. He been
waiting
coasting,
for these trades to take place.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like,
I'm going to rest up.
Like, fans sometimes get so emotional. And they be like, they want these guys to score 35, 40 every game. Like, man, LeBron need to step it up. I'm saying, let me say something to y'all. LeBron going to step it up.
When he needs to.
He's putting pressure on his organization to make the moves that he needs. And then you're going to see him you know, hit the nitro button and turn up. Like, right now, the last couple weeks, he was like, man, I'm frustrated. I can't play with these guys. The chemistry is bad. It's tension in the locker room. It's tension on the court. Guys don't like each other. And last night you saw, like, even though the Cavs were undermanned, they looked like a totally different basketball team just last night with Seti Osman, who I love, his energy. Like, I can't wait to watch this shit unfold. I'm telling you, man, like, I don't want to go far on a limb and say certain shit, but all I'm going to say is, like, I always tell you since the start of this year, Cavs in six.
I'm going in seven. I always say Cavs in seven.
Cavs
and six. So let's flip it around real quick. I want to talk about two moves. D-Wade going back home. Does this mean that this is the last year? You know he had some problems with Whiteside. How is that welcome home going to be, knowing that that team kind of wanted him out of there, and now he's back? Is this just a let's retire his jersey and get him out of here, or is D-Wade contending? Like, is he trying to win?
Oh, D-Wade trying to win, man.
Is he going to start? How's this going to play out?
Nah, he came off the bench.
Eventually, is he going to start, or this is going to be his role off the bench?
I think they're going to keep D-Wade in the reserve role, kind of like the same role Cleveland had for him to run that second unit and get those guys in the offense and you know, post up whenever he can. D-Wade still has something left in the tank, and that's the only part of the trade that Cleveland made that kind of had me like, damn. Because I wanted D-Wade to be a part of the championship this year with LeBron one more time.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Because I wasn't expecting that trade at all. I was like, what? But I'm sure they talked about it. I'm sure they have an understanding. They agree. They cool. Man. And that's why I'm cool with it, because they made that decision, clearly.
Yeah, they made that decision. They gave D-Wade a heads up to let him know, like, look, you want to stay? Because your role might be reduced a little bit. Because Seti Osman is starting to emerge. And, you know, you might have to cut back your minutes, but do you still want to be a part of this? Or we can send you home, make good on the trade, send you back to Miami, warm weather. Gabby was all for it, of course.
Because she was already there, yeah.
Yeah. She was already there anyway. So I was like, you know what, man? It's a good feel-good story. And I think that's one of those things that's rare, because they could have really been shady and said, we're going to send you to Utah like we did Derrick Rose.
Sick.
Like, even though Derrick Rose would never play a game in Utah, but it's like, damn, man, you got to start all back over.
Mm-hmm.
Probably go
whole new team,
that you're
new
not
city.
With.
Utah's boring. I just had DeLon on. He's talking about Utah was fun. I'm like, nigga. He said it was cool.
Hey,
I think it's because he had a lot of friends there.
I heard stories about Utah.
You heard about the hoes. You heard about the Mormon hoes that's down here going balls deep with everybody.
Utah, I heard stories. I asked a lot of NBA guys. I said, yo, what's give me some of your underrated road trip cities as far as the groupies. Hey,
Utah up there?
Hey, Salt Lake City.
They
Salt
lit?
Lake City is on the Salt Lake
they
City
on the
is
map.
On the list.
Okay. Okay, well, at least, you know, well, he got married. Didn't he marry one of LeBron's thirsty homegirls? Thirsty bitches that was after LeBron?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable. I heard about, what is your opinion of that, too, by the way? If you guys feel like he should have never even dated her after those tweets that she said about LeBron, but they also were saying that he shouldn't have married her because of the racial tweets. What is your rule on that? If a girl thirsted after your homie or tweeted him or maybe let him close or anything, is she off limits? Is there a time limit? Like, how does that go?
So give me the backstory again. Okay,
she's allegedly a racist based on some of the tweets she talks about black people, black women. She shits on them.
Is it a white
men.
Girl? It's a white girl.
Yeah. And then she also tweeted calling LeBron James her baby daddy multiple times back in the day, adding him, and then they on the same team. Do you think that that should play into their relationship? Like, what if she says, I changed? I don't mean that black people are this and that, and I don't want to suck LeBron dick no more.
I got an actual story. I got an actual real life story, like, in my actual family tree that relates to the same type of shit. Like, you would be surprised, because, like, I'm biracial, so, like, I got half white family, half black family. Some people know the story, some people don't know my story. But I have actual women on my white side of my family, like cousins and stuff on my white side. Like, they come from the most racist household mm-hmm. some of the most racist, like, type environments, you know what I'm saying? Like, where mm-hmm. they saying nigger, like, you know what I mean? They come from that shit, you know, the KKK, the Trump, all that.
Uh-huh.
And they date black guys, though.
Right.
But it's like, you would be surprised. If I showed you pictures of the people that are in my family, like, on the other side, you would be like, they go with black guys? Like, you couldn't believe it. So... You never know the reason. We all know the reason, I guess. But it's like, you'd be amazed, like, at some of the people are attracted to, or they have sex with, or they sexually attracted to. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy.
Right. IT, going to L.A., the Lakers said, Lonzo's their starter. Do you think that LeVar and IT going to have some issues in L.A.?
I said that shit to my boy the other day. I said, if IT go to L.A., to those Lakers, and he starts saying, I ain't going to do this, and start trying to call the shots, and I ain't going to do that, you best believe.
LeVar coming for him?
I don't even call him LeVar no more.
What
like,
do you
I call him? VAR. Like, VAR. I call him Uncle VAR. That's VAR.
Uncle
like,
VAR.
He's going to say, hold on, man. Like, yo, I run shit over here in L.A., bro. Like, hey, because... He ain't taking Lonzo's spot. We all know he ain't going to be the starting point guard.
Mm-mm.
So I just honestly think in the basketball sense that Isaiah Thomas is just there just to get this last couple, I say like 30 games, unless the Lakers, because they've been hot. They done won like 12 out of the last 16.
Yeah,
they lost tonight.
Oh.
They lost tonight against Dallas. And IT actually had a good game. I was watching this shit like, really, bro? Like,
you don't come out here and ball?
Yeah, your first game with L.A., you get 22 points. You shoot like 50% from the field, 50% from three-point range. I ain't see none of that.
Mm.
Damn, playboy, where the fuck is the hum at? Like Jay-Z said, like, what's up? Like, ain't that amazing with sports how a guy be on a certain team and then go right to another team and it's like,
a whole nother nigga.
Was over there.
A whole nother
yeah,
person.
But I still think IT going to be a sixth man, which is good for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't have any hard feelings about him. I know it's a business, a basketball business, so I hope he gets himself back together and he can make his money because people forget IT has never had a big contract. So
right.
I think his contract is like $6, $7 million this year.
Well, so, it was reasons for that. His journey to tell that story, you know?
Yeah, so I want him to get his big payday, but it just the shit just didn't work out. And a lot mm-hmm. of times the fans got to separate their emotions because, you know,
right.
You saw it the other day where the cat. It was before he got traded. The Cavs put happy birthday on Instagram to Isaiah Thomas, and fans was fucking like fans was saying all type of. You know how fans are, like,
right?
Fuck you and go trade this motherfucker. Like they were saying like crazy shit. I'm like, man, fans are fucking weird, man.
Weirdos. They need pussy.
Like fans are fucking weirdos, man. That's why I'm a fan of certain players and I like sports, but like that level of fandom is like y'all motherfucking crazy.
For real.
These dudes got families. These dudes got wives and kids. And they be treating these guys like like they literally meet in the grocery store.
It's
like,
just because it's the social media. That's all it is. It's social media. None of them would say it to
yeah,
anybody's
it's
face.
A lot of cowards.
And that's all it is. And that's it. Like I don't even entertain it no more. I that's why I talk shit back and I keep it moving because I already know you just type
it. I've seen it in person. I've seen it in person where people say, man, I can't stand LeBron James. Man, I hate LeBron
and
James.
See him and want a picture.
Look, I've been to barbershops for years, back when LeBron didn't have no rings. Man, LeBron ain't got no rings. It's all jokey joke. Niggas start seeing me with LeBron and seeing pictures. Hey, man, you think you can give me some tickets to the game? Blah, blah, blah. Come on, bro.
Sick.
I thought you didn't like LeBron. Like you see how people are, like, they switch their whole energy when they see somebody or they know somebody connected to somebody. It's like... Fans, like, they're so phony and fake and fickle, man. Like, it's just the nature we in now. Like you said, social media and everybody's mm-hmm. like an internet coward, and they want to make some weird picture of their avatar so they can talk shit, and you can't see who they are behind their words. That's just crazy.
Pause 1 second, Cuffs. We're going to switch this thing out one more time. All right. Last part of the NBA discussion. I know you saw all the shit that's going on in Washington. John Wall gets injured, and suddenly the Wizards are restored, they're renewed, they're hooping, and now the players are on social media. Beal's, like, you know, trying to front like he's quoting one of the greatest hood movies of all time, saying everybody eats. But then when you do it twice, then it makes people feel away. And then Gortat tweeted, and everybody's doing this all caps, team win. And then when the media puts the mic in front of these guys and say, are you guys taking shots at John Wall? They all say no. But then John Wall does a sit down with Michael Smith on the 6th and confirms that, yeah, they was talking about me. And I feel a way about it, but I'm not going to be mad. I'm going to let them keep talking their shit because they're winning. I'm still on the team. And when I come back, I'm going to still be on the team. So why do you think he did that? Why did John Wall take that bait and let everybody know that there's beef in their locker room, that these niggas don't really fuck with him? Why did he do that?
It's very strange. The whole situation is strange because I thought the Wizards actually had good chemistry.
Yeah, we all did.
Because I know a couple years ago, early in their relationship, I know there was some rumblings about, you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal not being the best of friends or not being good teammates and lacking chemistry. But the last two seasons, I was like, damn, they really clicking. You know, you can kind of see the body language. You know, they really dapping each other up. They jumping up. It's like you seem like, okay, it's love there now. So to see this come out, like, all I can think is, where would you be without John Wall? Like, sometimes these guys get caught up in a couple of regular season wins, and that shit looks good, you know, during the course of an 82-game season. But when those playoffs come, if you subtract John Wall from your starting five and say, okay, we're just going to take John Wall away from this equation, you're not beating anybody in the East without John Wall.
That's what I was saying. Does Bill even flourish without John Wall?
Like, you gotta humble yourself. Like, you're Martin Gortat. Like, you're a good serviceable center. Like, you're not even on the All-Star ballot, bro.
Your name, though, you can't even get voted for.
Yeah, you can't even get voted for, even in your own country. Like, you've got guys like I don't know what happened behind the scenes. We never know the full story sometimes, but I just know John Wall's story, and I got some good history on John Wall. He's from here, where I'm from. Like, John Wall don't take no shit.
Right.
Like, John Wall has been told he wasn't good enough even in high school. He got cut by, like, one or two different high schools, and now he's the number one pick in the NBA draft, all-star, perennial all-star every year. You think he cares about what a couple of teammates rumbling and saying? It's funny how these guys say this shit whenever you are not there and you injured or you sitting away from the team. You see what I'm saying? So I just feel like these guys just need to shut the fuck up and play basketball, because the Wizards had a great class and they beat Boston in the playoffs. So all you're doing is hurting yourself by just creating that. It's the same shit Cleveland was going through. When you start to have that tension and you got guys walking in the locker room not speaking and guys on the team playing on the bus not talking and having conversations, like, that's really where you automatically going to lose. Like, the teams that win, they like each other.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a few exceptions to the rule. Like, the Chicago Bulls dynasty, they didn't always like each other. But
Shaq and Kobe didn't always like each other either. But
yeah, Shaq and Kobe didn't like each other. But it's like, those guys have a mutual understanding. We here to fucking win. And when we step on this court, we here to win. So the Wizards, like, they sound like those guys, whoever they are, like, they sound like a bunch of, like, haters, really. That's what it sounds like to me. Like, that's what it is sometimes.
To,
like, guys
to me,
flat out don't like you.
It wasn't too long ago where I was questioning Bradley Beal's entire game. I mean, he has obviously turned it around a little bit, but a friend of mine keeps telling me that he's kind of like the new Ray Allen, which I'm not sold on yet. I was questioning his contract. I'm like, how the fuck is his contract bigger than John Wall's? I didn't understand. But that's what made me think there was going to be tension. When I saw he got a bigger contract than John Wall, I was like, this is a dick on the table type of situation. And this team is supposed to be John Wall's team. But when they gave Bill that contract, I was like, okay, I think something's going to happen. That's just what I was thinking.
I think you just better be careful what you wish for, because everything looks good when you're a shooting guard like Bradley Beal and you made your first all-star team this year. You're starting to feel good about yourself. You're starting to get some notoriety in as far as being a household name.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to feel like, you know, I'm the man now. I don't need John Wall. Like, yes, you do.
Yes,
bro.
You
like,
do.
That's one. That guy's a distributor. He plays lockdown defense. He takes a lot of pressure off you.
And he scores.
And he scores, too. So don't get confused. And start feeling yourself, because when playoff time comes, when you're getting double teamed now,
you need like, somebody to pass it to.
I really needed that other guy to break down the defense and take the pressure off. That's all it is. Like, guys' egos getting a little too big and the money. You know, you got pretty much a max contract, and you can't really tell these guys nothing now. But at the end of the day, Miko, we're talking about the Washington Wizards. We talk about the Washington Wizards. So I like John Wall. I respect him. He's from here, but they're not making no noise. They ain't making no noise. They're not going to be in the finals. We already know who's going to come out of the East.
Wow. Somebody asked Miko a question was, do you honestly believe LeBron James had anything to do with the Cavs trades? Do you think that he is the GM, or do you think this is somebody else? Because people are always saying that this is LeBron. He's doing all this. He's the mastermind. I would love to give him the credit. I really would, because I already think his mind is incredible on the court. If he's thinking like this off the court, he definitely need a GM job. But what is your opinion?
LeBron and GM, man, like, those guys really do their job, but they do consult with LeBron. I mean, you not to consult with the best player arguably of all time while he's a part of your franchise playing for your team every year about what potential moves you might be thinking about making. Like, you don't think they call or text LeBron? Like, look, man, we're thinking about doing this. We're thinking about doing that.
That's one thing to say thinking about, and it's another thing to say LeBron sat down in this meeting and networked and schemed and picked players, like, on the board and moved some niggas and talking about money.
That's for fans.
So he wasn't doing any of that. That's what they want to know.
That's for fans. That's for guys in the barbershop. That's barbershop jargon. Like, man, LeBron run that team. LeBron the coach, man. He the coach. He the GM. He the vice president, CEO. No. Like, he does have a lot of power, but he has put in a lot of, like I said, he's put in a lot of time, and he's gained that equity with the team. You see what I'm saying? Like, he's won a championship. He brought them the championship he promised them. He delivered on that. So I feel like he has that juice. He has that leverage. Mm-hmm. So if they come to LeBron with anything, like, you have to do that. Like, I don't think LeBron is sitting back saying, you know what? Like, you saw the memes and the jokes saying, you know, fire everybody, get rid of everybody. Like, I do think he was frustrated, and some conversations were had about, you know, I think we got to make some things happen. But those are mutual conversations. Mm-hmm. It's not a situation where it's like the organization is not thinking about doing anything and LeBron is knocking on the door like, yo, man, we got to make some trades. Like,
and they were just sitting there on their hands like, oh, okay, since you said something, then now we'll do it.
It's obvious. Like, these guys are proactive. Like, these guys are proactive at their job. And I just feel like it was the perfect storm at the right time. Like, they had to make this move. It was so much pressure from the fan base, too. So it's like, if you're a Cavs fan or LeBron fan and you watch these games the last 2 months, I mean, it got to a point where after Oklahoma City put 148 points on them and then they blowing 21-point lead, 22-point lead, I'm like, bruh.
It's time.
He got to fucking do something.
It's time.
So it's like, to answer your question, I think it's like kind of, it's not 100%. I just feel like it's like a middle ground there where he consults with the team, the team consults with him. You know, they ask his input, and they take his input. So I wouldn't say he's the GM or he's out there just flat out just, you know, in the Joe Clark of the high school and saying, you know, you out of here. You know, I just feel like he has juice, and he's earned that juice.
Okay. Jemele Hill left the Six, and she's doing something a little more pro-black with ESPN is what I'm going to call it. I don't really watch ESPN very much. Did they fire her?
Some bullshit.
They fired her?
Like, it doesn't take I hate the cliches. It doesn't take a fucking rocket scientist to look at this situation and say, okay, a lot of people kind of understand, like, my take on ESPN as a business and as a corporation, because these motherfuckers have stolen shit from me for the last probably 2009.
Yeah, like, Screamin' A. Smith stole shit from me.
I know you got a lot of listeners who might not be familiar with me, but if the people who do listen who know about me, like, you can watch that show and practically see hashtags and lingo, Michael Smith. I can just run down a list of guys. And female people on the that's employed there that just totally just jack your shit. But that's a whole nother conversation. But with the Jemele Hill shit, something is fishy. Like, something smells fishy because you don't just have a dream job. Like, that's a dream job.
She was
job.
The face of ESPN. That when they gave that's her and Michael dream. That show, she legit was the face of ESPN. I feel like they took it from her.
That's the dream job for like people that's aspiring to be like on sports networks, or you got local channels around the country, people doing sports. Like, to be the anchor of SportsCenter, that's the job that people work up to when they go to ESPN. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to get that position at this network where
she
I can
wasn't
be
even there a year.
Yeah, I want to be a household name and a household face that everybody can say, oh, white, black, Indian, Chinese, Arab, everybody knows your name and face when they watch ESPN around the world, right?
Right.
So you're telling me you want to go from that situation to behind the scenes, writing articles, doing some little whatever special, some little special.
Undisputed, is it? Or is it, which one is it? Undisputed? Yes, Undisputed.
Yeah, the Undefeated. And I know some people that, I know some people at ESPN. I'm not saying everybody's clowns at ESPN, because there are some thorough people that I rock with to this day, and they rock with me, that I do respect over there. But in the grand scheme of things,
yeah.
Like, it's a lot of herbs over there, ESPN. NBA, NFL, we all know the different people. But for her, like, I rock with Jemele. Like, she always showed me love. She had me on her podcast. Like, she had, like I interact with her. She's cool. But I just feel like they put the pressure on her. And I just feel like they did her dirty. I feel like they did her dirty. And they kind of, like, they tried to soften the blow. You know what I'm saying? Where we don't want to fire you or get rid of you. So it's kind of like,
because then it's going to cause too much backlash. And she, the thing that I didn't like about it is that she rolled with it. She rolled with it. I wish she would have not. I wish she would have put her foot down and said, no, fire me then.
You know what, Miko? My opinion on Jemele, like, I didn't tweet about none of this shit, because it's like,
yeah, me either.
Back when it was happening, and she got, like, suspended and all this shit was happening from Trump and all that, I was sitting back just watching everybody's, like, reaction. And I watched a lot of the backlash that she was getting. And I said it at the time. I said, you know what? Everybody's supporting her. But what we got to understand is people show you fake love and phony support and fake support and momentary support, but nobody's really going to be rocking with if your job. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, if she was to lose her job and say, fuck it, I'm out of here, everybody would say, hell yeah, Jemele, you know,
but
we got you.
Yeah.
But who's really going to, when all the stories blow over and the dust settles, who's going to be there saying, yo, I got you. I got you.
Who's going to watch whatever other show she does, or whatever else she does?
I felt like she was in a precarious situation anyway, because I just honestly feel like she could have did a Colin Cowherd move or Skip Bayless move and went to Fox.
Or Bill FF1, Simmons.
Yeah, and got her a lucrative contract at another rival network and said, fuck ESPN.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what I would have did.
That's how I feel about ESPN. Like I said, I got some people over there I rock with. If I feel like even those people are kind of in a situation where they got tape over their mouth. And that's why people ask me all the time, like, why don't I get into media or shit like that? Like, I never aspired to be a journalist or somebody on TV, or I never aspired to do that, even though I know I can do that shit better than 95% of them. But it's like, I know what type of personality I have. And I know what type of originality I have. And it's like, you will always be controlled at a place like this.
Mm-hmm.
They will always say, you can't say that, bro. Yeah. And I got proof of that. Like,
we can see it. We can see it when we watch the shows. We know.
Listen,
we know.
I got screenshots. I got tweets of guys at ESPN who hitting me up. Like, I can go, look, one of the main guys at ESPN right now that we already discussed in the conversation. Look, you know how you take a tweet, you know how you take a Twitter hiatus. You say, you know what, I ain't gonna tweet for like a month or two, right?
I ain't never did that before, but okay.
I took like a hiatus. I got off of Twitter for like a month. I think it was like 2 months.
Oh, yeah, I remember when you was gone.
I was gone, right? I get a DM like, yo, bro, everything good? You know, I ain't heard from you, man. Just checking on you. So I'm sitting back looking at my phone like, huh? And I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, I see why you checking on me and trying to see what's up with me. Because I'm your material.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my lingo, the shit I talk about, my perspective, my personality, the wit, all the humor. Like, they sit back
they
and soak all that shit up. From, yeah, they soak our shit up and say, yo, they was using my hashtags on their show. So I'm like, wow. And people, I had producers that worked at the show that was telling me point blank, yeah, bro, they really like stalk your timeline every morning. Like they read your timeline in the morning and they see what you're talking about. And they try to like twist and take words out and then they use that as their questions and subjects on their show. So it's like, that's why I always been like, fuck ESPN, man. Like they ain't cutting no check. You know, I respect Jamel because at that time, Jamel did reach out and say, yo, I want you on my podcast. I rock with you. But like some of the other ones, they'll steal your shit every day and then act like you don't exist.
And don't give you no credit. Don't ever like your shit, give you no retweets, nothing.
Nothing. And that's why I said, as a whole, like, man, fuck that network. Like, it's a lot of more real. That's why I fuck with Shannon Sharp.
Yeah.
He one of the realest ones. Like, yeah. I watch his show. I watch Shannon Sharp any day of the week instead of Stephen A. Smith.
Easily. It's not even close. It's not even close. Last question. I'm gonna let you get out of here because I done kept you late. Music. I'm a big music fan. I love music. I kind of wish I would have pursued it a little more. People laugh at me when I say I was in band until high school, but I really was. And
you
I loved
the clarinet
and the saxophone. Yeah.
Oh.
And I was obsessed. Like I really thought I was gonna be a music producer when I grew up. But when they told me I had to choose between band and basketball, that was done.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. See y'all. But I still love music. And so what I've been doing on my podcast is introducing my listeners to some music that I like. And anytime I have somebody on like you, I have them pick a song. I think I did with you last time. Did I?
No, I didn't do it last time, but I got a song. Song for you this time.
So what's your song and who's it by? And tell me a little bit about it.
My song, it's an underrated song. The song is by Nipsey Hussle.
Okay, Nip.
And it's on a project he did with this other guy. I forgot the guy's name, but the project probably came out like a month ago. But the song is called Stuck on the Grind.
Okay.
Like, I really like Nipsey.
What is the song about? Nipsey is lit. Nipsey's a real nigga. I love that he's honest and open. I hate that a lot of people are afraid to speak their mind about certain issues about gay, you know, homosexuality and all that. I just think people don't understand that everybody else gets to have an opinion too. They get to have a say. If they feel a way, they feel a way. You know what I mean? Like, we don't all have to agree with the way they feel, but they have a say.
That's the world we live in, man. Yeah. Soon as your opinion don't match their feelings, it's like, oh, fuck, I'm mad. I'm freaking offended.
Right.
Yeah, it's Nipsey Hussle. It's Nipsey Hussle Stuck on the Grind. I play that song like every day at the gym. I listen to it.
Sweet. Well, go ahead and get your last little quote out before we get out of here. I already know what you're about to say. Go ahead and get
Cavs
it out.
Cavs and six, baby.
Cavs and six. All right, Hussle. I called you Hussle because you remind me of my nigga Hussle that I'm always having on the show. But I appreciate you coming on. And thank you. And we'll be back.
Yeah, you already know what it is. Anytime you need me, I'm here.
I appreciate you.
All right.
All right, peace. That was Cuffs the Legend joining me today. Great conversation. I like that he was real about the Patriots and them losing. And he's still upbeat about the Cavs, which I am as well. The trades really restored me. I've been down. I haven't been wearing my jersey or my socks or my hat or nothing. But now I'm back. Now I'm fucking back. All the trades took place. We're back. All-Star is this next week. I will be in LA for some All-Star stuff. So if anybody has any appearances, stuff they want to do, paid and unpaid, make sure you hit my email. And for all of you that are visiting LA for All-Star, let me just say something to you because Cuffs picked a Nipsey Hussle song. It's a perfect song for this segue out of this podcast to let y'all know.
Stuck in the ground.
I understand that gangbanging isn't the same as it was in the 80s, but it's a different type of gangbanging going on right now. And these gangbangers are out here robbing you, okay? So make sure you're in the right neighborhood. Make sure you ain't in the wrong place at the wrong time, because these gang niggas will come and get y'all off. So we, and it, I ain't talking about the regular people. I'm talking about the celebrities. I'm talking about the famous people. They will be after you guys first. Be safe, though. Peace.
These niggas all star weekend. We'll see about it.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you. We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.